Welcome to the Minivate Gang podcast for Saturday, August 29th, 2009. This is Steve Borsch, and on with me is Tim Elliott.
Hey, good morning. Sounds like you're at the state fair.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're up high on the booth. And Graham Thickens.
Yeah, loving that music after being over there at the fair yesterday.
And wearing your cowboy gear.
Yeah.
And Phil Wilson from down in Kansas City, Kansas.
Actually, down in Hutchinson, Kansas.
Hutchinson, Kansas. All right. I have no idea where that is. And Julio Ojeda Zapata from, I think, in the Twin Cities, aren't you?
Oh, man, my teeny tiny little home office here.
Excellent. Excellent. So yesterday was the big social media breakfast out at the fair, and two of us were there, Graham and Julio, and you got to tell us about it. How was it?
Oh, it was a ball. It was, despite the rain that met us as we drove over there and the humongous traffic trying to get into the fair at our morning. The rain lifted shortly after things got rolling, and two big tents were set up there. And they even had entertainment. I guess they had a band before I got there. But by the time I finally got parked and in, it was already, the meeting was underway. And great networking, great fun. A lot of people stayed afterwards to go to the fair. What did you think, Julio?
I did hear the band, and the band was actually not bad. It was a pretty good band, and one of the things that kind of made me chuckle is I'm forgetting his name, but yeah, there's a City Pages a guy that has been tasked recently to cover social media. So he attended this thing, and I was just chuckling as I watched him, because he was, you know, Mr. Skeptical Reporter. What's the deal with these, you know, these insane social media people? You know, are all the social media breakfasts like this? This is nuts. And and I had to sort of explain to him, you know, this is a slight anomaly, because usually, you know, social media breakfasts are 80%, you know, business, 20% wackiness. And, you know, for this one, they kind of flipped it. You know, they had musical chairs and bacon haiku and that sort of thing. So I was giving him a little context. And I think that actually helped him in writing his story, because he might have written a story about, you know, these social media people are just completely flipped their lids. And his story actually was, you know, was quite, you know, balanced and fair. And so that was good. I did my little bit there. So.
Good. Well, he already published his story yesterday, huh?
Yeah. And he mentioned the fact that I was like roaming the place, taking pictures, and I was actually doing that on my iPhone, you know, pushing photos up to Posterous and using a program called Auto Stitch to create, you know, these gorgeous panoramas of the inside of the tent. And that was kind of my whole deal, you know, just kind of roaming the place with my iPhone and swapping, you know, business cards, you know, with people that I've been with online, but I've never met in person. To be honest with you, I'm not a huge networker. You know, I'm not Mr. Work the Room like somebody called Graham Thickens, I think. But I did a lot of that yesterday, and it was I was sorry to go. It was so much fun.
Yeah, it really was. Did you see a lot of first timers, do you think, Julio? I thought I did. You know, faces that I hadn't seen before that maybe came as a result of the publicity. You know, there was a piece in the Star Tribune that columnist Gail Rosenblum, is that her name, did a piece on social media breakfast the day before, and I wondered if that drew some new folks.
I remember earlier social media breakfasts where I could like scan the room and recognize just everybody. And what's been great about social media breakfasts is it's attracting a lot of new blood. And, you know, lately the more recent events, I'll scan the room and I won't recognize, you know, most of the people. I think that's great, because it just pumps some new blood into the thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was fun. I hardly even got a chance to tweet that much or shoot that many photos, because I was so busy talking. You know, people, I think, just hunger for the face-to-face networking, you know, after sitting at their computers all day. I know I sure do. It's a great chance to get away, you know.
It was interesting, though, to not see all the tweets from you, Because usually you are like crazy, but I figure with that hat you were wearing, those cowboy boots, probably tough to get around.
Well, I was eating the chocolate bacon, chocolate covered bacon, too, after winning one of the top 10 haiku awards. That was fun. So, it was good schmoozing, good networking, and the weather turned gorgeous, and the fair looked beautiful. We were right next to the Midway and all the fire trucks that they had there for a special display, and lots of fun.
I think the turnout would have been greater if it hadn't rained, because I think the rain scared off a substantial amount of people. Yeah. And that in a way is good, because, you know, only the hardcore social media folks were there, you know, the really committed ones.
Well, how about the $22 to get into the fairgrounds? I mean, $11 admission and $11 parking, that may have kept some folks away too. I don't know. Or people could have just given up in the traffic and gone back home too. It was pretty bad.
I actually hitched a ride with a guy that lives two houses down from me, who's another social media geek. So I was saved on the parking front.
Yeah, and some people were smart and rode the bus. I talked to one guy that rode a bus from Dunwoody near downtown Minneapolis, got over there in 25 minutes, just walked off the bus, and boom, he's there, you know. So that would have been the smart thing to do.
Hey, how many people were doing what you were doing, Julio? Because I you're using posters to put stuff up and so on. I saw some Flickr images, and I saw the stuff that you did in Animoto, Graham, but I mean, I wasn't really seeing a lot of people using tools
I was surprised. I didn't see a lot of that. But this was kind of my, I'm going to write a blog post and possibly a column about this. This was kind of my place to test pick posterous, because, you know, usually with posterous, I push things up via email. Pick posterous, the iPhone app, is good in certain unique circumstances. If you're at an event, and you're going to, over a period of time, you know, over a period of hours, incrementally post online, you don't want to push a photo up and have each photo be a new blog post. You want to incrementally add to an album. And that's what Pick Posterous is all about. I created a social media breakfast at the State Fair album. And then over time, I take a picture and push it up to that album and just kind of do that over the course of 2 hours. It works brilliantly. Yeah, and then, you know, I'd fire up, I'd take a bunch of overlapping photos, stitch them together with auto stitch. It would create one photo that was in my iPhone photo album. I'd push that up to a posterous via Pick Posterous. And I ended up with this fantastic photo album of regular pictures and panoramas. I've got bacon here. I've got Mike Kelleher with his bacon, his meat candy t-shirt. I've got Graham with his hat and his belt buckle. And Graham, by the way, I think your fly is undone, so I'm sorry about that.
Oh, no. Dressing too fast again?
Yeah, oh, I've got Supergirl and the Wonder Twins here. It was great. And then I took a video of the musical chairs and pushed that up to Posterous. And so, you know, this was the first time, in sort of battle conditions that I really put these mobile posting tools to the test. And I'm really, really impressed. And I'm going to write extensively about this.
Cool.
That's great.
Well, you know, I think most people, me included, did not want to be hauling their laptops in there, because, you know, people had a long walks from parking and stuff like that. So I did not see many laptops at all. I saw a lot of iPhones, including my own and Julio's, but let's face it, it wasn't a typical social media breakfast.
I did have a plan. I initially planned to like pull out my MacBook. Use my iPhone in a tethering capacity and do some posting that way. And it dawned on me very quickly at the event that that was complete madness. You know, you don't, the iPhone is the thing. You don't need a damn laptop. I should have just left the laptop at home.
Yeah.
Yeah. Next time.
In the car for sure.
Well, while you guys were doing that, goofing around, you know, playing with toys and wearing hats and so forth, Tim and I, for instance, were doing very serious work. And yet, at about 11:15, I went up to Micro Center to buy a Snow Leopard after my calls in the morning, and I hear, "Hey, Borsch," and I turn around, there's Tim with his copy of Snow Leopard.
Why were you at Micro Center instead of the Apple Store?
Well, I was going to go to MOA, and Mall of America, and I thought that's where Tim was going as well. And then, Tim, you were going to go to, what, Southdale?
Yeah, I did go to Southdale.
But you said they were closed.
Yeah, the store was closed for renovations, and ironically, they were supposed to open later that day.
Oh. Huh.
So I showed up about 10:30 or so, and they were still doing the last-minute renovations and weren't open. So that's when I decided to try Micro Center.
And it was $5 cheaper.
Yeah, that was great.
That was a bonus. Kidding. Yeah. But
talking the one up by Hoygaard's in St. Yeah. Louis Park there?
Yeah, it's the closest thing that we have to Fry's in the Twin Cities. I love that store because you know what? I got to tell you, I can find just about every obscure thing in there. But anyway, so got home and over lunch, upgraded two machines. I'd already prepped them, so they were all ready to go. Took 53 minutes to upgrade one, and it took about an hour and five to do my laptop. I'm sure just because the processors are slower. But then I went through, and I got to tell you that just about 98% of my stuff runs. Hmm. I'm just stunned.
I haven't found anything that hasn't run yet.
Well, I've got some obscure stuff. So I've got Wiretap from Ambrosia that I can use to route audio inside my machine to do different things. So that way I can use all my filters and Pro Tools to do voiceover work. And so that doesn't work. And then a little app called Blogo, which is for blogging, doesn't work. But other than that, I mean, I'm stunned. And it's much faster. And you know, Graham, you talked about Walt Mossberg's article. Mm-hmm. I haven't had a chance to read it yet. What was his punchline?
Oh, it's, basically that it's not an earth-shattering product. It's not anything all that cool. It's just basically stuff behind the scenes. It's going to make your Mac seem like it's running faster. And it's going to make, I think he said Safari 4 seems to be much better. But basically he said it's not, absolutely something he'd recommend that everybody do, but it's a nice thing to do. And most Mac users will probably want to do it that are already on Leopard. And it's an inexpensive upgrade, $29, and apparently even less at Micro Center. But I'm sure planning on doing it. And I think Mossberg's review, I think on Thursday, was as usual, very, very good. It kind of lays down, what it does whether you should do it. I tell you what I'm anxious to figure out or see is if it makes my Apple Mail work again. Apple Mail just stopped working on me or so ago, and it's driving me crazy, and I can't figure out why. So we'll see. Maybe this will cure it.
Well, I'll tell you one thing is that if you back up, I use Carbon Copy Cloner to make an exact duplicate of my core drive, but then use Disk Utilities to repair permissions, or mm-hmm. What I would recommend is download Onyx, which is free. The OS, you can choose Leopard or Tiger, and then you can run an automated number of scripts that does everything, clears out caches, repairs permissions, does all that stuff. And I've had
Onyx,
I'll put it in the show notes.
Absolutely. I did do perfect. The Disk Utility, and that didn't do it for me. So maybe I do need Onyx.
Yeah. And
how much disk space did you pick up, Steve?
I picked up about 7 gigs, maybe 8.
Yeah, that's another side benefit that Mossberg mentioned. Yep.
Yeah. No, I've got a 320 gig drive, and I picked up about 14 gigs.
Wow. That's great.
Yeah, it's worth it just for that,
Well, Tim, did you notice that? Because one of the things that's always bothered me a little bit was how much faster web pages parse in Windows. And especially on Windows 7. And it's kind of bugged me on the Mac that even when I've got optimized everything, it just didn't parse as fast. It just didn't load quickly. And I've noticed that after the Snow Leopard upgrade, that even the web pages render more quickly.
Yeah, but strangely enough, I'm finding that Firefox is faster than I expected Safari to be.
Really?
Yeah, I've heard that Safari is quite a bit faster, and I haven't really seen that big of an improvement from what I saw on Leopard. But I am noticing that Firefox is actually faster, which is kind of perplexing.
Huh.
I'll take that, though.
So what have you seen, Julio?
Yeah, overall, and I'm not Mr. Stopwatch benchmarking kind of dude, but overall, the OS feels snappier and our web pages seem to load faster. But I'll tell you, I had just as a warning to our listeners, I did have some fairly significant installation issues with a 13-inch MacBook Pro. I initially, tried installing over Leopard, which is what Apple is pushing everybody to do. They're kind of moving away from the clean install option. They just want you to install one on top of the other. I did that, and it seemed to install fine. But then the doggone computer just kind of froze, with the gray Apple and the little spinning wheel, and it just stayed there. They wouldn't boot properly. So okay, so I tried option two. I tried booting off the Snow Leopard DVD, installing that way. Same deal. And so finally, I went to option three, which was to boot off the DVD again, and then I went into the disk utility and nuked the hard drive. I just completely erased the hard drive, and then installed it, and that worked. So that kind of answers the question that a lot of people have out there about whether you can do that, whether you can install on a blank hard drive. You can, but it was kind of frustrating to sort of jump through the Apple's recommended hoops and to have it just flat out not work. And so that concerned me enough to cause me to delay my upgrading my home iMac, the one my kid plays games on, because I'm just a little concerned. I had just had a lot of trouble installing on that 13-inch MacBook. It did install okay on a 15-inch MacBook that I also had in the office, but man, I literally spent hours on this, and I was pulling my hair out.
Steve and Tim, how did you guys install?
Mine was a little convoluted. My DVD drive in my MacBook Pro doesn't work. So I thought I was going to do it the normal way, which is over a FireWire volume. But my FireWire enclosure didn't work. So I looked around and found that Leopard has the remote DVD capability to share out. So on my Mac Mini downstairs, I shared it out. And on my MacBook Pro across the network, I installed from the remote DVD. It took about a little over an hour to run, and it worked flawlessly.
That's great.
And you installed over your current Leopard?
Yeah. Yeah. I did the normal, running Onyx on Leopard, rebooted a couple of times, and then, double clicked on the remote disk and followed the installation, which seems a lot more straightforward. I mean, there's just not a lot of buttons you push. You push just a couple of, install kind of things. There's not a whole lot of customization available, and it just installs, and it worked fine.
Well, and I did the same thing, and the one thing that I've learned over the years is you always disconnect all your peripherals. And I mean, no, most people go, whatever, come on, no big deal, but especially external hard drives. So I unplugged everything, and I prepared the machine in advance, running Onyx and going through and running all the scripts and making sure that all the permissions are set up correctly and so forth. And then Apple, in this install procedure, they quarantine applications and extensions and so on that are not sanctioned as compatible. So here I am, I'm all done and everything's up and running on my main machine, and I'm going to turn and do the MacBook. But I thought, I'd test a few things. And I tried to boot up Pro Tools because that's, a mission critical app for me. And that's why I cloned that external hard drive so I could boot from that if I had to. And here was the kicker. It pulled up a dialog box that said that the extension wasn't available. Do you want to reload it? And I reloaded it, rebooted, and everything ran perfectly. So it's, you know, and I may be playing with fire here, I don't know, with core audio, but so far everything's working perfectly. But I did the same thing. I just installed right over Leopard, and I do honestly believe that it's all about making sure that the machine is prepped in advance with permission repairs and deleting caches and stuff like that.
So are you saying, are you recommending I should run Onyx before I do my install?
Yes.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. And if you have Disk Warrior, run that too.
Yeah.
I don't think sure I have that. Are these both free downloads?
No.
Not Disk Warrior. Onyx is. Oh. But also, okay, just make sure you back up. I mean, you can buy these doggone external drives now, and this is more for the listeners than you, but you can buy them for, I've seen them as low as $59 for a 250 gig external USB drive.
Mm-hmm.
And
I got a 250 FireWire, and that works great with Time Machine.
Yeah.
So we do Time Machine right before we do this, obviously.
Yep. So I've been really enamored by all of the cheap and free screen sharing stuff that's going on, DimDim and Adobe Connect and all of that. Has anybody even seen anything about the new iChat Theater and Snow Leopard? Supposedly it's much better.
Yeah, I haven't tried it yet.
Yeah, I haven't either. I'm not really using iChat that much anymore.
Why? What do you like?
Well, I actually use Skype and use its screen sharing, or if it's with a client, I'll use the free Adobe Connect that's built into the free Adobe Reader. You can do one-on-one screen sharing. And then if I have to do a session or a webinar or something, or I've got multiple people coming in, then I'll buy a month's worth of Adobe Connect for $40, you know, and then I can have, I think, up to 10 people on it.
Wow.
Yeah.
But Skype screen sharing works pretty well for you?
Yeah. Well, Phil, you and I use it a lot.
Yeah, we use it quite a bit. You know, the only downside is, and it's the same thing with iChat, obviously, and I think Steve's already highlighted the Adobe thing, which is really the answer. You know, you can't screen share with more than one person on Skype. That's kind of a drag.
But Adobe up to 10, huh?
Up to 10 people can see your screen.
Yeah.
But you say you have to buy the month's worth to do that or not?
Yeah, if you want to use, if you go and download the new Adobe Reader 9 and you go up, I think, to the file menu and it says screen share or whatever it says, you can do screen sharing with another person and you can send them the name of your room and then they've got audio conferencing built into it and you can use your webcam so you can see each other and so forth. So it's, I mean, it's really nice. Really well done.
It's built into Adobe Reader.
And it's free.
I haven't had Adobe Reader on my Mac for years since, Preview does everything I needed to do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But that's one. Well, I have Adobe Acrobat 9, so it's built into that as well. The free Adobe Reader has that screen sharing built right in and it's beautiful and it works well and it's fast and very professional looking. So, you know, if you want to do something with, for example, I've done it with people that I've interviewed from Innovate and then they've done screen sharing. So I can actually, if I wanted to record the session, so it works really well.
I've been trying a new program called Mikogo, MIKOGO, which is an application runs on Mac or PC for basically doing, you know, this kind of screen sharing stuff.
Really?
Heard of it. It doesn't do audio, but it's free. So it's useful. But I'll have to try the Adobe Reader thing to see how that stacks up.
Yeah. Do you guys know about the new basic screencasting features built into Snow Leopard?
No.
Okay. Oh, yeah. There are programs like Camtasia that you can buy that let you create, like Steve likes to do, he'll walk people through things on a computer, sort of do a demo with a voiceover. And I haven't played a lot with it, that feature in Snow Leopard yet, but if you want to do basic screencast, it's built in now, which is kind of neat.
So where do you access that? Is that from the Finder or
QuickTime? Right in the QuickTime. So you open up QuickTime on the machine, the QuickTime player, and then you go up to the file menu, and you have a new option called New Screen Recording.
Exactly.
And it will actually record what you're seeing on the screen. And my big thing is with ScreenFlow, which I can't even remember how much that is now.
It's $100.
$100, yeah.
Yeah, I just bought it this week.
Okay.
But, so it's good to hear that there's a free option out there now.
Well, let me tell you, Mr. Wilson. No. Here's the thing, though, is the power of ScreenFlow is being able to zoom in at high resolution on things that you're trying to show people. And
I kind of A-B'd ScreenFlow and iShow You, which I also have, because that was the cheaper option last year when I bought it. But, you know... Right. And yeah, ScreenFlow is a far superior program to iShow You, and I would imagine it's going to be superior to a basic screen recording app.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, you can screen record the entire screen, or you can with ScreenFlow. I mean, that's what you can do with a new QuickTime, but with ScreenFlow, you can actually be showing something, and you can zoom in on an area that you want people to focus on.
You can obviously blur out or darken down areas of the screen that you don't want to have emphasized. And, you know, there's a lot of highlighting features and add-ons to the ScreenFlow. So that's really kind of what made it went out for me. I think in iShow You, you can make the arrow bigger, but that's about it.
Yeah.
And QuickTime has some other neat stuff that lets you push up to YouTube and to Mobile Me, and these are interesting examples of Apple again sort of embracing features that were typically handled with third party products and sort of bringing them into the OS in an admittedly feature light form, but it's kind of neat. The pushing up to YouTube, I've typically used that with Elgato's Turbo product, which I like a lot. But I'm going to be interested to see how the video quality of the uploads compares between the two.
Okay, so now that we've all been fanboying all over the place with Apple, Ulo, you've had some experience with Windows 7, is that right?
Yeah, I'm gonna actually, my next column for the Pioneer Press is going to be sort of a combo. Here's Windows 7, and here's Snow Leopard, and the basic. I'll cut to the chase. The basic upshot of the column will be this is a good, this is a wonderful time to get into a new computer if you're planning to buy a computer, because almost simultaneously these two pretty wonderful operating systems are being released. Vista's kind of crappy, and Windows 7 is Vista done right. And I've been running both Windows 7 and the Mac OS together on my Macs for a while now, and it works wonderfully. I've been able to run Windows 7 even without Apple's official support, because they provide drivers and the whole thing. But Windows 7 has been running wonderfully on my Macs for months now, and now Apple, with the release of Snow Leopard, has full Windows 7 support built in. So now, if you want to get into both OSs on a Mac, which I do because my kid wants to fire up Windows to play games and such, you can do it beautifully. You can even in Windows 7, you can even access your Mac volume and read files right within Windows and fun stuff like that. So I'm really excited. Although, as I said earlier, with my Snow Leopard installation problems, I may hold off on the iMac upgrade for a little bit. But ultimately, I'm going to have both of the operating systems, making beautiful music together on my iMac here, and I'm pretty excited about that.
Well, one of the things I'm wondering about or thinking about, just as you're talking, Julio, and we're kind of kicking this around with operating systems and all of that. I mean, there's no question that the operating system on the desktop is not going to go anywhere. I mean, we have to have something that runs these devices. But the thing that, about QuickTime tying into Mobile Me and YouTube and all of that, I mean, it's all about the cloud. And Snow Leopard, instead of downloading and installing all the drivers, it does it based on what you need at the time, provided you have an internet connection. It'll go off and grab the driver from somewhere in the cloud. So we've kind of talked a little bit about HTML5 and why it's so important in terms of building web applications and doing more and more things in the web. And there's a lot of conjecture that Snow Leopard is so lean because of what it will do to be able to run on tablets and smaller devices. And I just read a guy's post about Windows 7 and him saying the same thing about Windows 7, that one of the things about it is that it will be significantly leaner than any Windows before, obviously including Vista. So what do you guys think about, and Graham, you're Mr. Cloud, what do you think about the positioning of this stuff? And do you think this is realistic, that this is what it's about? It's about preparation for more cloud computing by having leaner OSs that'll run on more devices?
Well, it sure plays in with the trend. There's no doubt about that. We are going more and more to the cloud, and it sounds like these operating systems are going to do nothing but help facilitate that.
Well, the thing about iChat Theater that I thought was interesting is it's how it's being positioned to do file transfer and larger file transfer. Now there's some things being written about Skype doing the same thing with Skype screen sharing, is having a more robust file sharing option. And so it just seems like it's moving in that direction quicker than anybody maybe is expecting.
Yep, I think so. Yeah, I think the cloud is can't be stopped. It's things are moving that way, and the doubters are very few anymore. I just read a nice piece in the Information Week earlier this week that something like 2 out of 3 IT directors now have budget for the cloud, from an enterprise standpoint. That's a pretty significant number in a time when budgets aren't increasing all that much. Of course, what they're spending for the cloud costs a lot less than what they would have been spending for non-cloud kinds of data center stuff. So a good portion of the budget is moving towards the cloud. In these lean times, but that's the primary driver for the enterprise is the economic advantage of it's like my friend George Reese says, the push for the cloud is coming much more out of the CFO's office than it is the CIO's office.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, yeah.
Yeah, Hamline University. I've written about this on a number of occasions. Hamline University is an example of a local college that just ditched, the box with the server software and all of that crap running on it, and they went over to Google Apps. They transferred all their student email and calendar, and they went to Google Apps. And it's the latest in a long string of universities that are just going that route. And they're just putting everything in the Googleplex. And I'm all for that. And, I'll be quite honest. A couple of times I've suggested, to the IT guys at the Pioneer Press, why don't we do this? And, at the Pioneer Press, like at other places, there's skepticism about whether this is a valid option, but it does work for a lot of companies, and they save a boatload of money.
Yep, they really do.
I just wanted to interject because I'm feeling a great level of frustration with respect to certain sectors of the economy. Clearly there's a lot of corporate people who are not yet really embracing anything or moving forward with respect to social media specifically, but cloud computing seems to be moving relatively slowly. But I'm also writing this blog for Scholastic, the big K-12 publisher, for their administrator magazine section And so I'm writing these articles that are geared toward K-12 district administrators, school principals, school technologists, and so on. And the slow adoption curve of education has always been the thing. I mean, everyone in the vendor community has always talked about the laggards and the slow adoption of K-12. But I'm even feeling it here in Eden Prairie, which is, you know, supposedly one of the top demographic school districts in the state. Eden Prairie and Woodbury, I think, are the top two. And yet even our web delivery and communication to parents and all of that is phenomenal if it was 1998, but it's 11 years past that almost. And it's frustrating that we all are seeing it. And exactly what you just said, Julio, about Google Apps. Google Apps has Google Apps for Education. And even that seems to be, being adopted slowly. And it seems to make so much sense. The security's there, and the capabilities there, and all of that. What are you guys seeing specifically? I know Tim and you and I have kind of kicked this around a little bit. What are you seeing in terms of objections that are slowing things down dramatically?
In the context of
just adoption, about taking on. Things like Google Apps or getting involved in social media or getting involved in blogging.
Yeah, I think it's there's two impediments. One is that people don't, coming up with subject matter to write about or to do videos or whatever they're going to do. They don't think that they have enough content, which is kind of the biggest problem. And then I think that a lot of people are still worried about the control thing. What if people say bad things about me? What happens then?
Yeah.
So, they don't trust the community. So that just takes time to get used to, I think.
But adoption for cloud things like Google Apps, is that what you were also talking about, Steve?
Yeah, I mean, just as an example of a platform footprint.
Yeah, no, I think that Google Apps, if it meets the need is from a features perspective, makes a lot of sense. I'm finding though that I'm personally using the Microsoft Office online now a little bit more than I expected, only because it's convenient and it has a lot more features than the equivalent Google App word processor.
Oh, interesting.
It's fairly new. I think it's with only a couple weeks out or maybe a week out. It's the Office online. So you go to office.com and you wire it up to your Microsoft ID. And it's basically Word with almost all the features running online.
Interesting. Well, here's the $64,000 question, because you can't do this with Google Docs. Can you share with someone that doesn't have a Microsoft ID?
I don't know.
Okay.
I probably not.
I have to go find out.
I would think that you would have to have a Microsoft ID, which isn't really a big deal. I mean, you just go and you get one.
Right. Exactly.
But it's yet another thing. It would be nice if they supported OpenID or Facebook, Twitter, or some other logon scheme that you already have an account on. But
yeah.
I wouldn't expect that from Microsoft.
Right.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Well, they want to get the eyeballs and get the people and build a relationship like everybody does. I would think that's probably the big key. So what do you guys think? Because this is another biggie. What do you think of the, because I think about the conversations, Phil, that you and I have had related to the whole consulting arena relative to new media and social media and all of that. And Jeremiah Oyang, who the four of us recorded a podcast with him when he was at General Mills, has now joined a new firm.
Uh-huh.
And Graham, you probably know too. Was it Charlene Lee?
Yep.
And a third person. And
Ray Wang, is that his name? The other Forrester analyst who bailed?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know him. In fact, I don't follow him at all. But he, concurrently with Jeremiah, he went over to former Forrester, Charlene Lee's new firm, Timiter Group.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, this is big news. Forrester lost a couple of key people, and of course, it's only been less than a year since Charlene bailed.
Well, with the downloadablemedia.org that you're involved in, Phil. One of the conversations you and I had was about brand building and about building your personal brand and all of that with respect to podcasting and downloadable media and so on. And that was one of the things that they pointed out in this article on the New York Times, on the blog article, was that you know, this is actually maybe kind of a bad thing if a company enables somebody to build a really strong brand and then they bail and go start their own thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they encourage them to be authors, you know. I don't know if they encourage them to write books, but obviously Charlene did, co-authored with, what's his name, Josh, the great book Groundswell, and became a famous brand of her own and promptly bails. And, you know, you got to wonder, is Forrester going to start putting in their employment agreements with new analysts that they won't do this to them? Or is Forrester going to continue being a training ground to launch careers for analysts who become famous bloggers and authors?
Well, I mean, here's the deal, guys. I mean, look, it really, this is the risk that you run in the business that this is. This is a very creative, thought-provoking business that, if somebody can process their thoughts and articulate those thoughts, then they're great people to have on your team. But you also have to understand that they're people that usually tend to be a little bit more entrepreneurial, a little bit more independent. And it's one of those things that you run the risk of, and you try to garner as much information from them and help them build your brand as best you can and keep them as happy as you can. But let's be realistic here. If it's not like, this is the day and age of company loyalty. I mean,
that's right.
You know, if a company finds, you know, is going to do something as far as about their bottom line, look, people are going to be the first ones to go. So to expect loyalty from the company, but not, or expect loyalty from an employee, those days are kind of over. You know, there are those exceptions. There are those companies that really say, look, we're in it to keep people employed, to keep the you know, the company culture alive, and you know, we'll take a hit on the bottom line. But no, these aren't the days that you're going to get a lot of loyalty. So you've got to understand as a company going in that if you want somebody that's a thought leader, you want somebody that is really passionate about what they do, most likely they're going to be passionate about doing it their way. So you try to cater to them as best you can, but at the same time, you've got to be really aware that you may not be able to hold on.
Well, I'll tell you the model to follow is the tech podcasting crowd. You know, there's a CNET, and you know, and the people that do the Buzz Out Loud podcast. I don't know if you guys have heard that, but there was a very sharp woman called Veronica Belmont that was part of that one time, and she moved on, but she's always coming back. You know, to guest podcast, and you know, CNET competes with, you know, Leo Laporte's outfit. But, you know, the Buzz Out Loud folks will be guests on Leo's podcast, and Leo will be guests on the CNET podcast. And, you know, and they're all, you know, technically arch rivals. But at the same time, you know, they're having fun together. They're friends. And it's kind of an easygoing kind of a situation. I think, you know, the Forrester researchers of the world should look to emulating, because if they start you know, foisting non-disclosure agreements on their talent, I think that's completely the wrong way to go.
There is absolutely nothing wrong for a Forrester to say, okay, well, that's great, you know, let them go and it, you know, make it an amicable split. You can always draw on their knowledge later on down the line, and it helps Forrester to say, okay, well, we need to go out and find the next level of thought leader. We need to find the next Jeremiah Aoyang or Charlene Lee. And it's not like they lost the Groundswell brand, because Josh is still there and they got still plenty of stuff there. So I think it can be a good thing for, Forrester. They can get new folks in the door because, you know, basically you've got Jeremiah, Charlene, and Ray Wang. They're all like, okay, well, that's Forrester East or Forrester West, you know?
Right.
So yeah.
Maybe there's some new stuff that, that Forrester, some new ground that they can break. Who knows?
And I'll give you an Pioneer Press example. You know, in the old days, the Pioneer Press and the Star Tribune were our rivals as they are now. But in the old days, if somebody had the audacity to leave the Pioneer Press for the Star Tribune, there was literally a perp walk. You had maybe 10 minutes. I'm serious. Maybe you had maybe 10 minutes to gather your belongings and you were escorted to the door and... Sorry, you might want to leave that out.
Come on, this is the internet. We don't leave anything out. Right.
And, you know, and that has changed, you know, with our new editor. I don't know if our new editor specifically has anything to do with that, but that has changed. You know, things are a little more relaxed now. When Rachel Stassenberger, the political reporter, went to the Star Tribune, you know, people were obviously a little upset about that because she's a big talent, but... they wished her well, and you know, and she had a departure date that was 2 weeks in the future, and before that date arrived, she kept working at the Pioneer Press. She kept working on stories, and you know, it was you know, people just need to chill. They just need to chill. You know, people are going to leave. People are going to go to competitors. You know, you might have a star, but that star may move on and compete with you. But you need to chill because you know those people are still your friends. They could still be useful to you in the future, and you just need to relax.
Yeah, well, I agree.
When the Star Tribune folds, she'll be wanting to come back too.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, you know, one thing I was going to say though is
then she'll be coming crawling to Minivate when the Pioneer Press folds.
I was going to say Jeremiah did make it a point to say how he left on such good terms with his boss, and she wished him well. And yeah, let's face it, this is the day and age of the free agent. We were talking about this after social media breakfast yesterday. I was with Lonnie Golden and Mike Ellsworth, and you know, everybody is really becoming a free agent in this day and age. Company loyalty is pretty much gone. People just don't have long-term positions with any company anymore. I mean, it's becoming an anomaly if somebody does, you know. I mean, I'm actually shocked when I meet someone who's been with a company for more than 5 years anymore, you know. So, and the positive thing about Jeremiah and his cohort, I'm sure they brought much attention to Forrester that they otherwise wouldn't have gotten. So they got a big benefit out of having those folks as long as they did.
Well, one of the things in that New York Times story, which I'm sure that Steve's going to link to the podcast post, is that, you know, Jeremiah especially brought so much attention to Forrester that now with him gone, and now with him blogging on his, you know, web strategist blog under this new company, is will Forrester now sort of take a back seat and not get as much attention in the social media space?
Well, that's bound to happen, except Josh is still there, and they have other social media folk. If they don't, they will soon. It'll be interesting to see who they pick up. On the East or West Coast.
Yeah, but groundswell notwithstanding, I don't really follow as much of Josh's writing that I do Jeremiah's.
Well, Josh is out speaking so darn much. You know, you wonder how much Forrester stuff he can crank out when he's on the, you know, speaking circuit so much. Of course, Jeremiah was too. It's got to be a grueling job. I mean, between all the speaking and the meetings with clients, you've got to crank out a lot of research and a lot of reports. And, you know, my God, I used to be amazed at Jeremiah. I used to wonder, when did the guy sleep? You know, I mean, he was blogging and posting all night long. And in fact, I think he often talked about how, you know, he was getting by with 2 or 3 hours sleep, you know, and more power to him. But, you know, can only do that for a while at certain ages, and you just run out of juice for that kind of a job.
Well, I think it was real interesting to hear you say the thing about free agents and to talk about that. If you remember Dan Pink, the Wired magazine writer that wrote Free Agent Nation now several years ago, and there's been subsequent writings about really the shift that's going on. And since I've been writing that post for that blog for Scholastic and kind of digging into the K-12 space, a little bit into the higher ed space, and about the shift in education, the shift that's going on with the examination of game theory and looking at the virtual classroom and looking at the classroom model and all the things that need to be changed. One of the things that needs to be changed is the fact that students, when they graduate from K-12 students now, when they graduate from college, are likely to be in a situation where they have encapsulated their value in some way and are in fact a free agent. This even having seven careers or seven different jobs in your career, that's even gone. Mm-hmm. So.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, people, some of my consultant friends, one in particular I talked to recently is that they don't see any gig as being long-term anymore. You know, I mean, even when they take a full-time position with a company, they might think, 2 years, my over under will be 2 years on this deal, and then it lasts 18 months, and it's like, okay, next, and they're on to the next thing. Yeah. And the important thing is you find challenging work. And you look for people that need the kind of help that you can render and nothing is forever. I mean, we were talking about after social media breakfast yesterday is that kids today coming out of college, they look at their fathers who maybe worked 30 years for 3M and they don't have even the slightest inclination that they would ever do that. I mean, that's like so far removed from anything that they see in their future. And you're right, Steve, they're coming out of college much more entrepreneurial, the kids today. And that's good because they're going to have to take care of, they're going to have to manage their own careers themselves. And the man is not going to just swoop down, excuse that ringing in the background, and give him a big fat job with huge benefits. Okay, now I'll mute myself.
All right. Well, good, because that'll give me a moment to write down here. Graham Thickens is in support of national health care. Okay. I had to get that.
Wait
in.
A minute. You mean Obamacare that has as much popularity as Hillary Care?
Well, it's good because it's the same thing.
It's in the 25-29% range of the American people in support of it. So, well, and I ain't one of them.
We didn't like it back in the 90s, and 15 years doesn't make it any better.
Yeah, I think people are afraid of the debt. I mean, I know I am.
Yeah, too much change. Too much change too fast.
Well, and it's not that we want to get down this rat hole, but
listen to you guys. You bitch about the way things are. You get a guy who's trying to actually fix stuff, and you go, "Oh no, wait, hold up there."
That's right. I'm not bitching about it. All I am saying is that actually I wanted to say something that was kind of an interesting twist on it. That I've listened now to a couple of different podcasts. I listened to IT Conversations and so on and so forth, and I picked this out of a few where people are talking, tech leaders, that is, are talking when healthcare comes up, that it could be one of the biggest catalysts for innovation that we've ever seen, because there are so many people that could and would go out and start something that don't, because they have to, they got a family of three or four kids, it's going to cost them a couple grand a month for healthcare and they can't afford it. But also I just brought that up only because when I think about all of us being free agents, how are we going to get healthcare? I mean, not that we're all going to be free agents, but it's just something to think about.
Yeah. Well, it's part of the budget, you just have to budget what it's going to cost you. I don't think a family of four would have to spend a couple grand. I mean, it seems to me it's more like average, it's more like 12 or 1400 a month or something, isn't it?
No. In fact, can I tell you?
Because
I think what we're coming to is more people getting their own plans, and we're not going to have these sweet plans that cover every silly little thing, and you're not going to have $20 copays for your prescriptions, and I know I don't. I mean, I have a $5,000 deductible policy because that's about all I want to pay for my insurance, and I'll take care of the small stuff. I just want to be protected against the big stuff.
Yeah, well, here's the kicker, though, because our daughter's still in college, and with the medical for four and with prescriptions, our average is about $2,200 a month.
Wow. Yeah, but so that must be pretty sweet coverage where you're getting prescription coverage.
That's exactly what you just described.
Copays and all that.
No, yeah. No copays. We pay retail for the prescriptions. No, it's a $4,820 deductible. And so it's real high deductible, and that's where I come. I mean,
it's
look
still $2,200 a month. Huh?
Yeah, and I look at my sisters as an example. That have company paid medical, and none of them could afford that. I mean, they just couldn't. Mm-hmm. So I mean that's the thing is it's the reality of it. Well, you know what? I don't want to get into it because it's way, way, way too deep. It was I had that thought when we talked about the free agent thing. But hey, what's coming up next? Isn't MEMA the next big event? The MEMA summit,
October 5th. Yeah,
that's the. Is there anything happening in September?
Yes, there is actually, and I want to talk to you about one, Steve, because it's a possibility for Minovate to be a media partner, and that's the Rainmakers Conference. Angel Early Stage Investment Conference, September 23rd and 24th in Bloomington, sponsored by the Rain Source Capital folks in cooperation with a national angel association. That's the latter part of September. But beyond that, we don't have a mini bar coming up that I'm hearing about, and that was hopefully going to be in September, but sounds to me like no venue could be found. And last thing I heard from Ben Edwards is that maybe spring for mini bar.
Okay.
So we'll see.
All right.
With a mini demo tentatively scheduled for November, I was told.
Okay. Interesting. That's too bad. Mini bars are fun.
Yeah, it's just a huge event for them to orchestrate, though, and they've got to have the right venue, and there was just nothing available, and even though sponsors were, apparently it's not going to take place, at least that was the last indication I had. Of course, they surprise us with dates on these things, like 2 weeks in advance, sometimes, so one never knows.
Yep.
Well, as I noted in that piece on mini demo being at MEMA, they are talking mini bar. So I don't know. They said they mentioned fall, I think, was it fall mini demo or fall mini bar? Now that I think about it, I can't remember.
Well, it was going to be a fall mini bar because they couldn't do it in the spring because they couldn't get a venue then. And he was really pushing to do something in September, but I just don't think he can find the right venue and the right date. And he did tell me, Ben, again, that he was thinking all day Friday instead of all day Saturday, as they've done in previous years. And I forget what the reasoning was on that. And it was at one time I was hoping he could home in on Friday, September 25th, but it ain't happening. I mean, no announcement is forthcoming. And the last he told me is he's thinking spring now for that. But he did say that mini demo is kind of locked in for November and February, but he didn't give me specific dates.
Okay.
But the venue is nailed down with that Intermedia Arts, I believe, again.
And Julio, do you have anything coming up? Like a new book on posters or something? I don't know.
Well, I wasn't going to bring this up, but I can tell you guys that I am working on a semi, quasi successor to my Twitter Means Business book. The whole point of Twitter Means Business is that, Twitter is a good business tool. And I'm actually in the process of researching a new book called iPhone Means Business, which essentially has the same thrust and structure. The premise is that the iPhone is becoming an increasingly useful and powerful business tool in the enterprise for small businesses, for home-based entrepreneurs, the whole deal. And so I'm documenting that through a, you know, through a whole series of interviews with, you know, companies, large and small. And so that'll be the companion volume to Twitter Means Business, which also, by the way, is in the process of being updated. So,
great.
And I'm not sure when the iPhone book's going to come out because I'm kind of swamped with the home landscaping crap here. But I'm
set your priorities.
I'm kind of picking away at it, and you know, in fact, Steve and Graham, I've interviewed both of you guys for my book. I thank you very much for that.
Yeah, yeah.
And we did keep it quiet until now.
Well, it's okay. I can talk about it. So.
Good.
Yeah.
And it'll be the same publisher, obviously. Happy about Cupertino, California, right?
That's a yeah. They have a very strange name, but they're a good outfit.
So, I love that.
So
name.
You,
yeah.
Did you hear the what about the rumor that Apple's going to get out of the iPhone business?
I haven't heard about that.
Oh, okay. All right, just checking.
We love to start rumors.
Yeah, exactly. Oh man. Well, all right, guys.
Get out of the computer business before they get out of the iPhone.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. All right, guys. Well, listen, it is going to be 66 and sunny, and I'm taking the kids to the fair today, so that should be kind of fun.
Cool.
And I hope you guys have a great weekend. Thanks.
Yeah.
Can I throw in one last thing?
Yeah, sure.
iPhone Chipotle iPhone app. It's back. Chipotle had an iPhone app, and they pulled it for quality control reasons. And the Chipotle iPhone app is back, baby.
So you can pre-order for pickup.
You get to order your burrito on an iPhone now?
On the iPhone, correct.
Really?
I'll be darned.
Go download it.
So it's just like their fax in service.
Another vital service provided to
them. Exactly. I'm a happy camper.
That's great.
Yeah. Hey, Steve, key lime pie on a stick. It's good.
Yeah. Seriously?
Ooh.
Yeah, it is.
All right, good, because I'm trying to bulk up a little bit.
Yeah, you started to face the whale a little bit.
That's right. All right, you guys, take care.
Yeah, have a great weekend.
You too.
See you guys.
Now you know, but you still got time. If you want me bad enough, got to give me a reason not to give it up. You're